listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
For Wednesday, June 11th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, hello, Michael. As always, I'm glad to be here, but tonight is really special. We've got a guest. It's going to be awesome.
It is special. We have a good guest. I'm looking forward to a fascinating discussion, and I just want to say thank you to everybody joining us live. I've already loved the discussion so far tonight. Appreciate those that join us in the archives, and, you know, anybody listening, if you get a chance, you know, come join us live, too. We have a good time. And we want to say Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. One moment.
Are you sneezing, Michael?
I am. Okay, I think there was about
Michael
five. But we had about a 5 sneezer right there. So
I figured. I knew it. Oh,
all right, we are back in the game, and we're going to start with those 9 principles. Number 1, do no harm, do right. Number 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, Dr. Vicki, you're absolutely right. We have a wonderful guest tonight, Dr. Oliver Williams. So happy to have you. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, yeah, you've been with the school for a long time.
Yeah, I started back in 2015.
And what degrees? Because I know you went back for more. What degrees did you get, Oliver?
Well, I started out with the Doctor of Holistic Life Coaching. And then I got another Doctor of basically healing techniques, energy techniques.
Yeah.
And then most recently, Doctor of holistic wellness.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I want to give you a really good plug here, everybody. Oliver M. Williams on YouTube, master musician, writes his own music, and so it's this whole big package that you are of healing and people and serving and through your music, and it's fabulous.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, I consider it an amazing superposition, if you want to talk quantum language, you know, where everything that we do is everything that we do.
Yeah. But we're going to talk more about miraculous creating tonight.
Right.
And I know you wanted to say a few words on that first and help explain your take on that.
Yeah, I wrote the book Miraculous Creating back in 2011 when I had to literally create my own miracle based on some challenges I was going through, you know, with, you know, work and life and everything else. And so, you know, as I just really opened up to the infinite wisdom and knowledge of the source, you know, some very, very powerful principles beamed down that downloaded into my first book called Miraculous Creating. So then I began to see the miraculous creation process coming from my understanding at that time was that a miracle is basically a positive intention that's fueled by, you know, the grace, the energy, the wisdom of source energy, you know. And so part of it is just opening up to the infinite possibility of what could happen as you align yourself with the source through intention. And so when I was able to do that, you know, then during the course of that year and beyond, I've been able to create miracles pretty much by at will. So I consider being on this talk show with you guys a miracle, because this is something that I've been wanting to do, I've been desiring to do for a long time.
So, if we'd have known that, we'd have had you on a long time ago.
Yeah, Jeez, I know that.
I'm so glad you reached out.
Absolutely.
And I know you've been in touch with Dr. Douglas Kelly all these years. And, so when you talk, what you call a miracle, mm-hmm. Would that basically be or essentially be when these good things come your way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and a lot of it really has to do with being open to possibility. I mean, for years I was a student of Dr. Wayne Dyer, and one of his phrases was be open to everything and attached to nothing, you know. And that really resonated with me. So, you know, things come your way, and particularly if you're thinking about something, or if you have something in your mind, or if you have a project that you're doing, and you really tap in to source energy as the fuel, you know, to make whatever situation that you desire possible, you know, then it's amazing some of the coincidences and the synchronicities that show up as a part of that, which, you know, become a part of the miracle-making process.
Well, the attachment to nothing is a really tough one to grasp, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. I think that's for everybody. How do you detach or not be attached to anything? Don't you think that's the key?
Well, I think that's a very, very important distinction, you know, because if you look at attachment, you know, from a Buddhist perspective, you know, when you become attached, you know, then essentially you are giving up your power to whatever you become attached to. You know? Mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. when you give up your power, you are powerless. And then that, for many people, just throws them into a low vibrational state, which, you know, doesn't allow them to do anything.
Hmm. And I think we're probably talking about degrees of attachment too, right? Like all of us are sure. attached to certain, like we're attached to very, to principles, to beliefs sure. and things like that. We're attached to people in our lives, but it's an unhealthy attachment when things yeah. are out of yeah. balance yeah. that we're really yeah, talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about the distinction between, you know, the polarity of positive and negative attachment. You know, you want the positive attachments, but the things that you're attached to that don't serve your highest good, you know, then that really puts you into a place where for many people, they go into survival mode. And then when you're in survival, you know, the only thing you can really think about is how to survive. Mm-hmm.
Don't you think, though, that survival instincts or the survival conditioning that we've grown up with, it always remains and is something that people struggle with?
Well, I think it's a continual struggle, you know, because, you know, for many people, you know, they're in survival as a response to some kind of a trauma that happened to them, you know. And if you have been subjected to multiple traumas over and over and over again, you know, then the trauma becomes complex, and then that becomes a state of being. And, you know, there's neuroscience that supports that, you know, based on the fact that, you know, your brain cells begin to fire and wire around that particular situation. You develop these neural networks that support that. Next thing you know, you're living in a trauma-based society, a situation where it may appear that you are attracting trauma to you. It sounds kind of crazy, but I've worked with so many people who life has been in such chaos, you know, based on the fact that they really haven't had an opportunity, you know, to process the trauma, you know, and to release it so that, you know, they could figure out other ways to operate.
Mm-hmm.
I can say, like, I can only speak for myself in this way, you know, being fight or flight from childhood. I was way more argumentative when I was young, and I admit that it was more to not just defend myself, but to validate myself in some way, because nobody else was,
right.
You know, or so I thought. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, of course, now at this age, I have recently recognized how I've evolved from that who I used to be into I don't fight, I don't argue, I don't go there. Because I know me, if I fight, it's to win.
Yeah.
Or I just roll over and say, I don't care. Because I don't care how you put the toilet paper on. I just don't care.
No. There's only one proper way. Overhanging. I don't want to hear any debate. But, you know, I totally get what you're saying. And this is kind of an offshoot, but... You know, I gotta say, I fight because I love, for the love of the game. You know, I don't necessarily need to win, but I wanna get into the thick of it. I wanna play around with ideas. I wanna be challenged. You know, that's why, again, I'll say it again. My personal hell is a place where everybody agrees with me. I need somebody to challenge me and to disagree and to, you know, to be, you know, different so I can be challenged. And, but, you know, I do appreciate what you're saying about this trauma. And, you know, Dr. Vicky, you're talking about the fight or flight. And, you know, all that I'm thinking about and when I'm hearing this is I'm thinking about, you know, basically, intense heat can create the strongest steel, or it can make brittle glass. Right? It is in the way in which it's done. And there's so many variables at play, and there's so many things to life that make it unpredictable. Right? So we kind of, you know, trauma can be, you know, a horrible thing, but a lot of times it is a catalyst for personal development, for that kind of evolution to the next level, the next plane, if you will, to be.
Yeah.
Somewhat poetic.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it from a free will standpoint, you know, a lot of times the trauma shows up as a lesson. And, you know, you really embrace the lesson. If you don't, you know, then what you find is that you end up making the same mistakes over and over and over again and continue to re-traumatize yourself, you know. So, you know, free will is about really embracing the lesson in whatever particular situation that you're in. And then as you move into your next move, you know, then you intentionally don't make the same choices.
Do you think then that the more we come to terms with those kinds of traumas, the more we can visualize to create?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, because part of it is turning the light on, you know, so you know, you turn the light on and then you can see what's going on. You know, if you don't turn the light on, then you're going to bump into stuff all the time. I think about walking around in your house with the light off. You know, you might stub your toe, you know, run into a wall, you know, bust your lip, you know. You turn the light on, you see where you're going.
So what do you have some basic principles in your book, Miraculous Creating, that you share with others? It's like, is there a step-by-step? Because I apologize, I haven't read it. So.
Yeah. I just sent Mike an ebook. Mm-hmm. I can send you that too.
Vicky. Actually,
yeah, they're actually.
I probably should have asked, but I took the liberty of forwarding it on to Dr. Vicky there. So,
something
to read a little bit later here.
Yeah. Well, they're actually seven principles in the miraculous creating process, you know.
Okay.
The first one is the principle that I call at-one-ment. And at-one-ment basically means that you connect to whatever you call your source energy, you know. And that's kind of tricky for a lot of people to understand, you know, because if, you know, you are married to a particular religious you know, belief, you know, then you hear the distinction of source and you say, what's that? Well, you know, mine is God, you know, or maybe it's Buddha or Krishna or Ra or whatever else. Well, you know, part of that is it's all the same thing, you know. And so I think, you know, as, you know, men and women on the planet over the years, we have gotten to the place where we have tried to understand and make sense of the unknowable, you know, and then in our attempts to make sense of it, that we create so many different kinds of rules and practices that you have to elevate to that at one minute, you know. Mm. But if, you know, you're at the mind where you can be open to the possibility of recognizing that there is some power out here, you know, running the multiverse that's bigger than you, that's what you plug into. You know, that's the fuel that that provides the power for creating the miracle.
That's an interesting look. You know, and you know, and when you say power, and you know, I guess as good a time as any to throw out a disclaimer that, you know, when we talk about things, they're not necessarily reflective of ICMH, but I love getting into this. And when we're talking about power, we're not necessarily meaning like a dogmatic conscious God. We could be some kind of universal power, like the connected consciousness, the Akashic Record, all these kind of different things kind of lend itself to this idea of a universal power. Am I right on that, or are we thinking of something
else? Absolutely. You know, I remember, you know, when I was writing my second book called Happy New You, I had an experience where it was a hot day like it is today. And I got up early, I went to the gym to work out, and then, you know, I stopped and got a snack. And then there's a little Forest Preserve lake by my house, you know, that I like to go and just kind of hang out and sit, you know, and people are out there fishing and stuff. So I went there that day. It was a hot morning. I was going to go there to meditate, you know, so I'm just sitting there and I'm just, you know, just being present. And it was amazing what showed up that day. You know, we had there was a mama duck and her little seven ducklings in the water swimming. And then, you know, there was the, you know, breeze, you know, nesting the trees and other people that were out fishing. And, you know, it was just this orchestration of this amazing presence, you know, that was powerful, you know, and that was intelligent, you know. And when I was just allowing myself to sit in that space and absorb all that, you know, then that for me was another manifestation of the oneness, you know, because something had to create all that. And so it wasn't, you know, I didn't have this image of, you know, this, you know, old dude sitting up on top of a hill somewhere, you know, saying you've got to do this or that or that. Otherwise, you know, you're going to get banished to some dark place, you know. But it was more of an awareness that there was a presence, there was a force that, you know, organized infinitely all these things around me and made it a very, very cool experience.
That was very interesting.
So what would be the other steps to follow?
Oh, okay. So then the at one met basically means you plug into the source. And then another step is intentionality. And so that's basically being very, very intentional about what you desire to have show up as your miracle. And so that involves, you know, having some kind of a vision and having that desire to make that vision manifest and putting attention to that, you know, and whether it's, you know, just getting up and, you know, making a juice every morning or whatever else to create the miracle of your health, you know, so you're very intentional about that. And then as part of the intentionality, you have what I call an intentional set point, where when you wake up in the morning, the first thing that you do is you set the point of your intention, and then you drive your day from that point. And then that just helps you organize, you know, how you're going to do your day.
Well, for me, that's a cup of coffee.
There you go.
Okay, from intention, we go to...
Intention goes into consciousness restructuring. So then, you know, when you restructure your consciousness, that's when you basically observe and let go of whatever it is that doesn't serve you, whether they are negative thoughts or or different practices, you know, that you do that don't serve you. So you got to, you know, be in the mind of making some adjustments, you know, and then being really intentional about that. So one great example of that is, let's say that you want to start an exercise program because, you know, you want to uplevel your vitality, you know, but then your mind says, oh, I'm so tired. I don't feel like getting up and doing yoga, or I don't want to go to the gym. Well, you know, if you want to have, you know, the miracle of health, you know, then you have to figure out how you're going to mitigate that negative thinking, you know, so that, you know, you can put yourself into the place where you can actually, you know, do what you need to do as part of your intentional set point.
So from there.
Oh, okay.
I'm just trying to get I'm, you know, digesting this in this step by step because it's making perfect sense.
Right. So then from there, you have faith. And faith basically, for me, means that, you know, what you desire is already out there on some level. And having the faith that that it will show up when it needs to show up. So an interesting story that I have from my childhood is when I was a kid, I loved Christmas. And so every June, July, you know, I would have my, you know, Oliver Williams Christmas list, you know, usually the latest toy, the latest blah, 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 you know. And so I would announce to my more than father, hey, you know, I know it's July, but, you know, for Christmas, you know, I want this model airplane, or I want this, you know, piece of clothing or whatever else, you know. And so my mother, you know, would just kind of observe that. She said, okay, you know, we'll see. She would always say, we'll see. So my mother had her own business. You know, she was a hairstylist, and she worked out of her home. And so, you know, back then, before we had, you know, Venmo and Zelle and things like that, people would either pay her in cash or coin. So anytime that her customers would pay her in coin, she would take the coins and put them into an empty kitchen cleanser container. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, silver dollars and half dollars and quarters and that, you know. And so she'd be collecting these coins. And then by the time that it was time to go shopping, you know, my mom had all this loot.
Right.
And, you know, she had enough money, you know, to basically get everything that we desire for Christmas, you know, as presents, you know. And so
that's awesome.
You know, that was the faith of me knowing that, hey, I'm going to put this out there. I want these things for Christmas. And then Christmas Day on faith, the things that I desired showed up under the tree.
I like that. I, you know, as we've been talking, I luckily have the PDF copy of the book, and I've been kind of skimming along here too and going the subjects. And I love how you, and I'm not the only one, we have it in chat here too. Damien here says that faith like that is actually very powerful in his opinion. And I completely agree. And being able to detach, I actually had this debate not terribly long ago that you can, that faith is not necessarily a dogmatic religious thing. Faith is an everyday thing. You have faith in so many things. And you know, there's a, in your ebook here, there's another example too that I love here, from 2010 in New Orleans. But, you know, I love this concept and how it motivates people. And I'm going to let you get to that next part too. But, you know, I think so often about when you're looking at history, you know, longtime listeners know I'm a history buff, and when you look at history, you look at the ancient beliefs that people had, and you can really say, well, whether it's literally true or not, it's very important because it affects their behavior. People change their behavior based on their beliefs and their faith, and that changes history. It has a real world effect, you know, that you can measure. And then, of course, we're talking about above and beyond that, but very interesting. I love that. I just want to make that point, but I'll let you get back to it too.
Well, actually, faith is happening with me live right now because I am putting together a 2025 summer and fall music tour, you know, that features my energy music concept, you know. And so I'm just throwing a lot of stuff out there. And I got a letter from a guy that I went to high school with, by the way, yesterday. And they're having an anniversary for all the kids who graduated from my high school. You know, and so I said to myself, this would be an interesting venue to do my energy music program. So just crafted, a nice letter, sent them, my videos information. And so I have faith that in September of this year, I am doing an energy music concert at, the high school that I graduated from, way back in the 1960s.
Very cool.
And the when?
Yeah, well, so I'll send you an invite. You can get on the plane and come over.
It's a lot. Yeah, I know it's kind of scary because 2 years ago there was the 50th high school reunion, but I couldn't go. I didn't want to see all those old people.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Vicky. I'll just have the the concert videotape, and I'll just send you a copy.
Oh, I love that. That'd be awesome.
Your comment there makes me think of it was a quip from a comedian online, and I'd reference him if I remembered his name, but he basically said, at some point, when you hit 40 or in your 40s, you get to that point where you're simultaneously 20 and 60 inside your soul. You never feel like you're really old per se, but then there's all those things that, pop up and remind you.
Right, right. So then moving on from faith, then challenges come up. Mm-hmm. And so challenges, I think, are just amazing, because that's where a lot of folks stop their miraculous creating process. So if you think about miraculous creating process from just the normal creating process, then there are three components to it. You've got, whatever your vision is, and then your accommodation phase where you do the work, and then you have the completion where, your vision shows up. So then in the accommodation phase, that's when challenges come up for people. Things like, well, I don't have enough money to make this project happen, or, I got a cold, or I broke my leg, or people don't support me. Mm-hmm. So you got to take a look at those challenges, and then you frame them as opportunities. And then when you reframe the challenges as opportunity, then what happens is that you begin to see a lot of possibility within the opportunity. And then once you see the possibility, you take inspired action, and then you can completely reframe that challenge into something that's cool.
Yeah.
I love challenges. You do. I'm working on a painting right now. Like I told you about, Michael. Mm-hmm. I've never painted dogs before, and I've never painted ravens before. And of course, it's all going in with this painting of Odin. And being dyslexic too, I have to watch and I'm taking my time on this. And I know it's just a painting, but this is kind of my approach to life. Always has been. Is like taking that one thing at a time, kind of like, and then I have to step back and look at it. And okay, I'm not seeing that properly. I'm not saying this properly. My depth perception is different, mm-hmm. or my structure is out of place. And that's where it's being able to challenge myself to see how I see things.
Yeah.
And then to reroute my, and not that it ever gets totally rerouted, because it is what it is, but mm-hmm. to understand myself better in that way.
Well, the other thing that you can take a look at when you embrace challenges is knowing that a lot of times when you are presented with something that is outside your comfort level, then that's going to make you uncomfortable, And, part of reframing that challenge into an opportunity is to allow yourself to become, comfortable with being uncomfortable, because that's how you stretch.
I had a talk with one of my daughters the other day, And I've always kind of been one of those who flies by the seat of her pants. Mm-hmm. And they're planners. All my kids are planners. So maybe I had a reverse effect on them. But she said, I kind of don't understand you. And I said, I don't understand myself. So, you know, it's the way it got put together.
Yeah.
And that's the way I function better because, you know, as you've been talking, I'm kind of digesting things for, like I said, for myself. I always went from the oneness and faith before I challenged anything else,
mm-hmm.
even as a child, because it was a dark place.
And yeah.
I knew life was different somewhere else. But the minute I left that environment, I had to deprogram.
Yeah.
Oh, this is called some deprogramming. Because
yeah, yeah.
It'll bite you one way or the other, yeah. You know.
Well, that, mm-hmm. that becomes a challenge for a lot of people, you know, because if you take a look at life from an epigenetic framework, you know, then you're talking about being the product of whatever environment that you grew in, you know, grew up
Absolutely.
In. And yeah. if that environment was like really toxic, dysfunctional, lousy, and you know, you learn in the first 7-8 years of your life that as the reality of what life was all about, you know, then that's your download. You don't know anything else, you know. You really have to get to the point where you're willing to give up that story, you know, and mm-hmm. learn some new tools in order to, you know, figure out what the best version of yourself is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my place of faith, it's because I always had people talking to me in my head. You know, I just knew that these were spirits and there was a different other realms of the universe. I always knew that. Mm-hmm. And I trusted those voices more than I trusted people. And even if there was some, you know, shadow beings, I knew to filter them out. And I can't explain why I knew that, except that even at 5-6 years old, I say, oh, this is not how it's supposed to be. You know? But when you're talking about, you know, fast forward to the challenges, I think the biggest challenges are with yourself. But as life goes on and life is longer, it changes, and our neurological systems change too, because when we go through stress as older, of course, we don't have the same, I think, we don't necessarily have the same wherewithal, the same stamina. The body is affected more delicately mm-hmm. than when you're young. I think there's way more filters when you're mm-hmm. young, and the body mm-hmm. can take a lot more pressure when you're older, and there's pressure challenges. There's a greater sensitivity, and I could be very wrong about that, but that's kind of my take. And yeah. working with older people and myself being an older people, so, you know, it's the sensitivity is increased, but I think there's lots of layers in that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm saying is challenges can also be categorized by age and circumstance.
Right, right. However, you know, I have encountered numerous individuals who were a lot older than me who are doing some amazing things, you know, and they mm-hmm. didn't allow the fact that they were, you know, 85 or 90 or however they were to stop them, you know. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of my quotes that I created is change means to be greater than your circumstances, you know.
True. Yeah.
And you think about a circumstance as whether it's external, something outside you, or what's going on inside your head, or whatever. You know, once your circumstances become superposition, you know, then if they are negative circumstances, then they could actually dictate the power in your life, you know. So a lot of times people have to look at that as a challenge and look at reframing that.
Mm.
So I'm looking at the last paragraph of the book on challenges. And so it says, as you embrace your challenges, please know and understand that your challenges are vehicles that transport you to a place of self-revelation. as you begin to know yourself as well as the Creator knows you, allow yourself to release and let go of all ways of thinking, being, and believing that do not benefit you. As you turn over your challenges to the Creator, you are ready to open yourself to your miraculous creation. And so that's where the at-one-ment comes in, you know, because, you know, you know that there's some power that's greater than you that is your fuel, you know. So, hey, you know, you got a challenge. Hey, give up the challenge to the Creator, to that source, and then usually you'll get some kind of an answer or some kind of a message through your intuition that will help you understand, process, and overcome that challenge.
You know, I appreciate how you've put that together, Dr. Oliver. I appreciate the clarity, I think, in which you deliver what you're saying. And because I think everybody can relate to that. Mm-hmm. And you're not saying it in a way of, like, you know, the power of positive thinking, just wish for something and it comes true. Mm-hmm. You're also layering it or peppering it with, here's the work you have to do, and really it's all in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember I was going to this one gym in my area. This was back when I first moved out here. And I went to the gym, and the gym was, you know, it's kind of a beefcake gym. All the bodybuilders would show up, you know. In fact, there was this guy, you know, who was a bodybuilder there, and this dude was known to be able to squat, you know, like 1,100 pounds, which I think is crazy. Nice. But there was this woman who I noticed riding the bike, exercise bike, and she was obese, you know. And so every day I'd go to the gym, she'd be on the bike, you know. And every day she'd be on the bike, you know, huffing and puffing. And then, you know, for a while I stopped going to the gym, and I think I must have gone back there maybe like 18, 19 months later, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I see this woman who is in the mirror posing, practicing her poses for a bodybuilding competition. And then I looked at her face, and it was the same woman.
Wow. That's awesome. I love
that. Yeah. So talk about, you know, someone overcoming their challenges. I mean, you know, she completely transformed her whole body.
Well, I've known people to do that myself, and I think it's like anything, though. If you make a decision, mm-hmm. you know, you just go do it.
Yeah.
And there's not the iffiness about it.
Well, and that's the key thing, isn't it? You know, it's the will behind the decision you make. You know, it's mm-hmm. The finality of it. When you say, this is going to change, and, you know, you're willing to accept everything that comes along with that, then change will happen. And as my father is fond of saying, when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change, you will change. That's another way of looking at it too. But, you know, I, when I was, you know, a teenager, I was, you know, I've always been a big guy. I've always been tall, but I was, you know, like a little over 300 pounds probably. And in my 2021, I lost like 115 pounds. So I was down to about, you know, 200, 215 in that bracket for most of my 20s. And it was just through sheer will. You know, there were times where, you know, I had no real strategy. I didn't diet. You know, I was active just because, you know, my job at the time required it. And I, you know, had dogs and all that. But it was just will, just the decision. And, you know, it was what I wanted in my life at that time. And there were times where I would just, you know, fast for an entire day just to prove that I could, you know, just to emphasize my will. But of course, now I'm a middle-aged man, and I put it back on. And frankly, I have no problem with that. And I'm enjoying my life right now. But but nonetheless, I absolutely understand that mindset behind it. It is the finality of that decision. It is the enforcement of your will, and there is no going back. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, so for people who really like to take a deep dive in on YouTube, I call YouTube University, by the way. There's an interesting story. The guy's name is Arthur Borman, B-O-O-R-M-A-N, and he has a couple of videos called Never Give Up. Mm-hmm. And Arthur Borman was a soldier who was injured I think, in the first Gulf War, and had gotten to the point where his injuries caused him to gain a lot of weight. So he was up to like 297 pounds, and he needed braces, you know, on his knees and arms just to walk, you know. And so he decided that, hey, something's got to happen. So he was doing a deep dive on surfing, you know, the net, and he found Diamond Dallas Page's DDP yoga program. And so he said, wow, this is something that I could do, you know. So over the course of years, he studied, you know, Diamond Dallas Page's DDP yoga, you know. And the DDP yoga basically involves, modified yoga poses, old school calisthenics, and rehab exercises, because that's how Diamond Dallas Page, the wrestler, got back into the ring after injuring his back, you know. Wow. And so Arthur, every day, you know, he would do what he could. And one of his dreams was to be able to run. So at the end of the video, you know, there's Arthur Borman running.
Right. I like that.
You know, Dr. Jerry.
Dr. Wick, we lost you there for a second. You said Dr. Jerry, and then you went quiet.
Are we here?
Yep, I got you back. All right. You said Dr. Okay. Jerry, and then.
Oh, Dr. Jerry is asking about steps 6 and 7.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. The sixth step is allowing and receiving. And so when you allow yourself to receive your miraculous creation, then you and your miraculous creation are a vibrational match. And that is the practice of being on the same thought energy vibration of that which you are creating. And so that involves you being in alignment or moving in the same direction of the creator, with knowing that the creator is the ultimate original dynamic miraculous creator.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have to really be willing to allow that vibrational match to show up, you know. And then once you're in that vibrational match with whatever you are looking to create, then you got to be willing to receive it, you know, because if you don't receive it, then you don't have it.
Oh, you know, that's such a big one, like to be a I coined a phrase years ago, you know, I like to do good things for people. But when somebody does it for me, I go, oh, you're trying to out-nice me.
Throwing down the gauntlet, are they?
You can't out-nice me, no. But that's also a measure of control, right? Yeah. Wanting to have control.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but to be able to receive is humbling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, so, a lot of that, a lot of people are givers, you know, and they give, they give, they give, they give, you know, but then they don't really know how to receive, because maybe they haven't been in a space epigenetically where receiving was something that was welcomed, you know.
Right.
And so a lot of people really have to learn how to be open to receiving the gifts that are given to them.
Oh, isn't that the truth? And, you know, a gift being anything from a compliment to, you know, something more, you know, substantial. Yes. And things like that. It's, you know, I have a trouble taking compliments sometimes. And I think a lot of that is just, you know, I don't know if it's like a Midwest thing. I don't know what it is, but that kind of, nope, I can't acknowledge good things about myself. That's for other people to say if they want to. But, you know, if I get a compliment, you say, oh, thank you very much. And then, you know, you move on. You don't dwell on it.
Don't negate my compliments. You know,
well, not if you say it, Dr. Vicky. That, no. In that case, I'm taking it, you know?
You know, that's the thing about what we don't understand is, like, to be gracious with compliments. Because somebody has just given something to you, and you say, oh, no, you don't mean it. That's a horrible thing to do to people, you know?
Yeah.
Don't do that.
And, you know, part of the problem is a lot of us here, especially, I'd say, are very maybe intuitive. We're empathetic. We pick up on things. And frankly, there are times where people don't mean it. They say something for a means to an end. So you get to that point, at least I do, where, you know, I'm starting to wonder, are you really mean that? Or are you saying that for some other point? Or, you know, are you trying to blah, 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 blah?
But I'll take it anyway. Even if you're trying to manipulate me, I'll take it.
And, you know, it'd be funny. You know, I usually make a joke out of it now. So, you know, I'm I'm at work, I'm talking to somebody, they give me a compliment, like professionally or something, and I always, you know, go, have the go-to, flattery will get you absolutely everywhere, keep it up. So, you know.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
So I don't want us to run out of time. What is step seven, Dr.
Step Miller? Seven is giving. So giving is actually receiving. So giving is receiving is giving is receiving is giving is receiving and giving is receiving. And so there's a kind of a play of consciousness when you think about that. So then when you think about a gift, the gift is a transfer of something, whether it be an object or a word or a thought, without expecting anything in return. Mm-hmm. And so I think about the process of going to the Aldi grocery store, right? You know, and then you know how it is when you have to have the quarter to get the cart.
Right.
You know, so there have been many times where I've been in receiving mode and in a giving mode, and I may have given someone my cart without expecting them to give me the quarter back.
Yeah.
And then I'll be in a situation where I need a cart, and someone will give me the cart and say, hey, you keep the quarter. So that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, pay it forward, right?
Yeah. You know, I pulled up to a meter in town today and had my quarters out. Oh, there was already 30 minutes on there, and I went, I'll pop him in and he'll help the next guy.
There you go.
Yeah, small thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, every gift that you get is a blessing, you know. So every time that you give something, that's a blessing, you know. So there is like an positive entanglement.
Energy. I know so many people who want to control the giving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a friend of mine years ago, a wonderful woman, very wealthy, called me up one day and said, I want to do something for your grandchildren. So you tell me where you want to take them. I'll pay ahead and you can take them there. And I said, oh, no, thank you. And I thought, you know, it's a nice thought,
mm-hmm.
but she's controlling it.
Yeah,
right.
You know, she could have just sent it to them or sent it to me to give it to them and say, here, go have fun.
Yeah. So unfortunately, a lot of people give, but they have a lot of conditions attached to it.
Right.
So you wonder if that's really good.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, on that point, how many times have you known a toxic person, a narcissist, that use giving with compliments, with monetary things, with gifts, whatever it is, to go hand in hand with their criticisms and their, you know, abuse, you know, give with one hand, abuse with the other, to keep people, you know, from leaving, things like that. Narcissists are the worst.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so the really important overlay with giving is having just a sense of gratitude, you know, because when you're grateful, then that just opens up the space for so much more to come into your life.
Mm.
It's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
So may I ask you a personal question, Dr. Oliver?
Absolutely.
In your life, what was your turning point, or did you have one?
Turning point in terms of
in waking up or
the catalyst.
Right. What was the catalyst that led to this?
Yeah, I actually had a pretty major crisis of faith, you know, that actually turned into a spiritual conversion, because I grew up in a particular church body and went to, you know, Sunday school and vacation Bible school, and went to 2 years of their high school, and then 5 years of their college, you know. Mm. And then after I graduated from college, I actually worked for a little more of a year as an educator in that group. And what turned me off, was the hypocrisy and the racism that was part of that when I became an adult and got out into the professional community. And that just messed me up, you know. People who you thought or your friends, you know, would basically talk about you behind your back and other kinds of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And so I just made a decision that, hey, I can't be in that environment anymore. And so that's when I really began to look at just some other possibilities. And, you know, from a kid, I always, you know, needed to have some spaces where I could go to be quiet. In fact, I was talking to my sister about this the other day, because in the house that we lived in, I hung out in the basement a lot, you know, because nobody else would go down there. And that was kind of like my domain, so I could be quiet. And I think that I was probably meditating then and didn't know it. But that was just my way to recharge and regroup. So then once I left that job that I had with that church body, then that's when my spiritual, you know, path really took off. And so I got a job in the substance abuse field and was introduced to the 12-step program, which is a very, very spiritual program. And then from there, I was introduced to a lot of other things, you know, that, you know, led me to be where I'm at right now.
Mm. You know, I relate to what you're saying, although I'm white. When I was a kid, I had friends, well, we had quite a mixed community, but I had this one black friend, and my mom said it was okay to be friends, but don't grow up and marry them.
Yep.
And I had a very racist family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But growing up in the church also, I was 14 teaching Sunday school.
Yep.
And I was looking at the picture of Jesus on the wall. And, you know, one of the older elders, what you have to get teaching your class, get the class. And I said, who said Jesus looked like that? Shouldn't he have brown skin?
Mm-hmm.
And they kicked me out. And I went, this doesn't make any sense to me.
Nothing
about this makes any sense to
me. Well, that's kind of like the par for the course when it comes to a lot of times when it comes to belief and things like that, right? You know, like I've often made the joke and the comparison between, you know, like you go to any part of, you know, Southeast, you know, Asia, where you have Buddhism prominently, Buddha looks very much like whoever carved him, right? And I think we all kind of tend to do that, and I think humans have a tendency to forget the point, and they make it more tribal. And that's my main point in saying this, is that humans have a tendency to take these things and make them tribal, because no, I am not a believer in the Christian dogma, but I can even admit that if you are a true believer, then you ought to be a pacifist, you ought to be accepting of everybody, you ought to be freely giving with your love and your, you know, your acceptance. And I, even though, again, I'm not a Christian any longer, I was raised in it enough to be offended when I see people that talk the talk because they want all the social benefits that come with having that persona, but they do not walk the walk. And, you know, if you're going to say you believe in something, at least walk the walk, you know, at least put your stuff behind it. Too much, it becomes a tribal signifier. It's too much, it becomes just a marker of, you know, what you do for the in-group. And that's a shame, you know.
Well, tribalism is all about fear, you know, because part of the energy of the tribe is to keep the people out who don't believe what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
You know, one thing I will say, I was raised a Jehovah's Witness, as most people that have been listening know. One thing I will say, there's, you know, and I don't think it's, you know, universal in what I'm about to say, but at least in my experience growing up, especially with their narrative that they wanted to sell, which is really how they do it. You sell a narrative, they're salespeople. You know, I didn't see a lot of racism, because it wasn't about what ethnicity you were. It was about whether you're a witness and whether you're not. If you're a witness, doesn't matter what you look like, you're good. If you're not a witness, doesn't matter what you look like, you're bad. So that was the signifier, not anything else.
Well, yeah, it's all the environment too. I want to thank you for sharing your story, mm-hmm. Dr. Oliver. You know, this hour has gone by so quickly.
It has.
That's why I wanted to make sure we covered all the points and got through this. And I want to remind people, you can do you have a Facebook page? Do you also have a website that people can go to?
Yeah, I have a website. It's www.doctorofthespirit.com.
Doctor?
Spelled out or D-R?
Yeah, spelled out. Doctor of the Spirit.
Doctor Spirit.
Doctor of the Spirit. So, you know, D-O-C-T.
Okay. Well, anyway, writing it down.
I have to type things. I can't visualize it like that.
So everyone, Doctor of the Spirit.
www.doctorofthespirit.com.
.com. And you can certainly catch Dr. Oliver's music on Oliver M. Williams on YouTube. And do you have a Facebook page that's active?
Actually, I am in the process of completely redoing my business. Okay. I'm moving into holistic wellness education. So I will be putting out a newsletter to announce that in the next, you know, week or so. And then I will, you know, because I've really been resisting the whole social media thing, but I'm going to really need to do social media to do, you know, marketing for my business.
So. I think you'd kill it on Instagram.
You know, Instagram has been speaking to me.
Hey, there you go. There you go.
You know, I think you would. I think that would, you have the presence for it, you have the voice for it, you have the material for it. I think you'd do really well.
Yeah. I've been avoiding.
That's
just
my opinion.
I agree with Vicky on that, and I maybe even TikTok, but I avoid TikTok like the plague because I'm, maybe it's because I'm a contrarian, like millennial, but I don't want to do whatever the popular hot thing is. You know, everybody's doing that and blah, 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 you know, so I'll stick with IG and Facebook and whatnot.
Well, Instagram and Facebook's all I do. I can't do the TikTok and the threads and all the other things. I
love it.
It's too much. It's too much for me.
Yeah. You know, I like Blue Sky too. Blue Sky's good. But no, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to keep up with. But I tell you, just get out there. You're doing a great thing. I've enjoyed this conversation. You know, I haven't checked the YouTube link, but I know a couple of people in the chat have. You got some compliments already here in our live chat on the site here. So, yeah, I love it. I love having you. It's been a fantastic discussion. So I got to say, you know, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. I've really appreciated this.
Well, thank you so much. I have so much material that I can share with you guys, so I would be honored to come back.
Well, you're going to come back.
Don't have to twist my arm. Jeez.
Absolutely. You know, Michael and I love having guests. No, number one, we are curious people.
We
love to talk. But it also frees us up from finding topics.
Well, you know, I think I was joking with somebody earlier today. I was saying there are times where we might not know what we're talking about up until the moment, but then something takes us and we get into a good discussion. But, you know, Dr. Vicky, unless you've been keeping a keen eye on our chat, I do have a surprise for you. Dr. Mike is going to join us next week.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, so we're going to have Dr. Mike next week.
Mike on.
Dr. Oliver, we'll get you back here sometime. Again, you know, we got more to go over and plenty of things to talk about. And, this has been great. This has been absolutely great. So, it is that time, you know. So, we're going to start wrapping it up here. And on as we kind of go out here, Dr. Oliver, just any last thoughts you want to leave us with here?
Well, actually, I am taking the miraculous creating concept and taking it to the next level. And so what I'm doing now, I'm in the process of writing a book where I am superpositioning the miraculous creation process with metaphysics, quantum physics, and spiritual practice. So stay tuned. That's some wild stuff.
Fabulous. Look forward to that one for sure.
I love it.
Thank you for joining us. Don't go away after we disconnect with the program, Dr. Oliver. But, you know, I want to say, everybody, you know, as the world is kind of a little bit off its wheel these days, don't let them push you around out there. Just be yourself. Stay true to who you are.
No, that's always a good idea. I tell you, it seems like the world's tilted as if on an axis. But then again, it kind of, again, when I look at history, kind of always has been. I think we had a little bubble, but man, life is crazy. But, you know, I'll echo that. You know, live your life. Be who you are. Be, you know, as long as you're not hurting somebody else, as long as you're staying within your boundaries, be proudly who you are, whatever that is, and live your life. So appreciate you again, Dr. Oliver. Look forward to having you back on. Look forward to those follow-ups. Thank you, Dr. Vicky. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Until next week. Listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.